Madam Marshal, will you please? Oh, we have to find Jim or Judge Flory. I know he's here, but there he is. Okay. Madam Marshal, will you please call the case?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Flory, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Denise Riley presiding, now calling the case of In Re Petition of Valet Living, court file number A20817.
And good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We will conduct this hearing just like we do when we're at the Judicial Center. You each will have 15 minutes, and Mr. Huntington will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if he chooses to use it. I ask that you state your name for the record. We are recording this session and will be posted later today. So, Mr. Huntington, oh, and if at any time you can't hear or understand, please raise your hands. We didn't have issues with our first oral argument, but sometimes things can pop up. So, Mr. Huntington, with that, are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
You may.
Your Honor's counsel, may it please the court. My name is Brian Huntington. I represent the petitioner and appellant, Valet Living, in this matter. The Fire Marshal Code Advisory Panel, or what I'll just refer to as the committee, a small committee comprised of deputy state fire marshals, developed the subject interpretation in closed-door meetings without any public participation or input. The committee determined to prohibit valet or corridor trash collection services, which are legal in the overwhelming majority of the states and which have millions of users nationwide. The committee issued its interpretation after conducting a survey of 100 members of the local fire code community. The survey results reflected that nearly one half of the fire community disagreed with the committee's construction of the relevant fire code provision. Nevertheless, the committee went ahead and issued its interpretation banning the services without responding to or addressing the adverse feedback or even observing that the survey had been conducted or the survey results in its interpretation.
So, Mr. Huntington, the legal question that we have to answer is whether the agency erred as a matter of law in determining that there was only one reasonable interpretation of combustible storage, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, how you taken that standard of review and how we traditionally examine and interpret language to determine whether it's subject to more than one reasonable interpretation. What's the relevance of the survey?
Your Honor, I think you have to look at the SA Ag Incorporated decision, a 1989 decision of this court, which is published, which holds that conflicting interpretations, especially of the agency, are relevant to the ambiguity analysis. In that case, there was, I'm sorry, I just noticed that one of my client contacts is entering the waiting room here. I don't know if I can admit her. Okay. So in SA Ag, there was an Addendum A, which was an interpretive rule, just like is before the court now. And the interpretive rule interpreted certain language substantially in place in one way. And in fact, previously, the same agency had interpreted it differently. And in fact, it was directly opposite. And the court said, you know, this evidence shows that clearly this phrase is reasonably susceptible to different interpretations. And that is the real crux of the question before this court is when you look at this language, which in this case, it's undisputed that the only section of the fire code they say prohibit these services are this combustible storage language in 1030, 1031.3. You look at the dictionary definitions for sure, but I do think that you should look at how is the local fire code community actually interpreting or understanding this phrase. And in that regard, it's interesting, Your Honor, that on one hand, the agency takes the position, well, this interpretation necessarily follows from the plain language of the fire code. But then they say at the same time that, well, we needed to adopt this because there was so much confusion within the industry, people were calling us asking whether or not these services, how we could regulate them or could we regulate them. And that was the basis for them proceeding ahead, which is certainly at least contrary to the idea that this is so well understood to apply to the services, which is what the ALJ found, that it's not ambiguous. I think it's important to recognize that the fundamental principle that this court has espoused on numerous occasions is that the Minnesota Administrative Procedure Act rulemaking procedures were enacted for the purpose of ensuring we have a government of laws and not of men, and that administrative officials are not permitted to act on their own whim or their own impulse, no matter how well-intentioned they might be. In this case, the committee has effectively prohibited an entire service area from operating within this state.
I understand what the effect of the interpretation is, Mr. Huntington. The question that I have, and it wasn't entirely clear to me in reading your briefs, what is the alternative reasonable meaning of combustible storage? I mean, it wasn't entirely clear to me what that other meaning was. What is it?
Well, in that instance, I think you have to look at the various definitions that are applicable to storage. And the definition of storage that we would cite the court to talks about long-term placement for purposes of safekeeping. And in fact,
so what does that mean?
Go ahead,
Judge Flory.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to follow up on Judge Frisch's question because, both our case law and, in fact, the state fire code says when terms are not defined, they shall have their ordinary accepted meanings within the context with which they are used. And our case law supports the context consideration. And it seems here the context that we're looking at is placing household trash in the corridor for pickup, which would seem to fall in line with the ALJ's determination that the only reasonable definition of that is items left in the corridor for disposal, because that's exactly what it was. People didn't want this stuff back. So how does long-term storage in a warehouse, for instance, how is that reasonable under the context of what we're looking at here?
Your Honor, I think you have to look at the Phoenix Insurance Co. v. Taylor case. What the agency did here, the basis for the agency's decision that this is storage is they said, well, it's just like when you have a retail store and the store has an item on the shelf. Clearly, that's storage. Well, that's exactly wrong. That's exactly the opposite of what our Minnesota Supreme Court decision said in the Phoenix Insurance Co. v. Taylor decision. They said, no, the purpose of storage is that you are leaving it there. And what was happening in that case, they sold gunpowder, and that gunpowder was sold on site and then carried away. But they said, we're not going to interpret storage. Now, that case was an insurance policy, but we're not going to interpret the word storage to incidental placement of an item where the intention is not to leave the item there and have it for, you know, when it's in a retail store, it's transitory. It's ultimately intended to be taken away. And they said that intention bars the conclusion that that's storage. And so I think that the court should look at that decision because it's basically talking about the exact same definition of storage that we reference in our brief. And I do think it's important, Your Honor, look at the definition that the ALJ relied upon: to place or leave in a location such as a warehouse, library, or computer memory for preservation or later use or disposal. The ALJ overlooked that parenthetical completely, gave it no weight.
So let's talk about trash, okay? And maybe let's not talk necessarily about what valet living does, but what people normally do with trash. So in my house, I put my trash in the trash can in my kitchen, and then I store it there until it's time to bring it out to my garage. And then I bring it out to my garage and I store my trash there until it's time for the garbage company to pick it up. And then I wheel my trash can out to the curb and store it there until the trash company picks it up. So I'm trying to understand why or when trash becomes something other than storage until it is collected.
Well, I think the very fact that there is uncertainty regarding at what point something becomes storage shows that it is in fact ambiguous.
Well, it's storage the whole time. It's storage until it's collected.
Well, so in your hypothetical or in your particular instance, you're leaving the garbage there and I presume maybe it sits there a week. Maybe it sits there 5 days.
I hope not.
But under the valet living services, it's sitting there at most. The garbage is sitting in the container outside in the hallway at most for 3 to 5 hours. And
but it's stored there until one of your, are they called valets? I think
that's yes, what, they're called valets, yes.
Until somebody picks it up.
Well, it's certainly left there. Whether it would be deemed to be stored there is the legal issue. Whether it qualifies as storage when it's placed there is certainly the issue that you have to decide here. But I think that what distinguishes our scenario from your scenario is the very purpose of setting it out there is for someone to take it away.
So what is it then? How would you define it, the trash that's left out for 3 to 5 hours outside of somebody's apartment? What is it if it is not storage?
I think it's incidental, Your Honor. I think that the intention behind the person leaving it there is not to store it there and leave it there indefinitely. It's left out there knowing that within 3 to 5 hours, it's going to be taken away.
And it but just so incidental would be an adjective, right? It's not a noun. Storage is a noun. So what is the thing that we're putting outside of the door if it is not storage?
Well, when I look to the case law, Your Honor, I look at that Phoenix Insurance v. Taylor decision, and the Supreme Court doesn't define what it is when the item is being left on the shelf of the retail store. So it's hard to give you a legal meaning for what that is. But in that case, they had no difficulty in saying, storage, this is not. Storage, this is not.
And why isn't it combustible?
Well, Your Honor, I think there are two important things to talk about with respect to combustibility. First, there is another committee of Minnesota fire chiefs, and they look at the fire code and they think about potential amendments. And in fact, the Minnesota Fire Marshal has members on that committee, and we included committee minutes attached to our petition. You know, that committee had difficulty construing what specifically is prohibited by the combustible storage language, but they say items are not meant to be prohibited. Well, they didn't define what that meant, but they certainly didn't say any level of combustibility is meant to be prohibited. So that's one. The fire marshal and this other state fire chiefs committee had difficulty determining at what point is something actually at a sufficient level of combustibility. Second, Judge Flory made the decision, made the reference to context here. And in fact, in section 2 of the 2018 IFC, there is a definition for high piled combustible storage. And what it says is basically goods, with respect to goods, they have to be analogous to or similar to highly flammable objects like group A plastics, like rubber tires that are piled. And if they want to deem those goods to be combustible storage or high piled combustible storage, they have to be similar to that. And so I think you can look at the context and say, well, here, the trash, it may all be non-combustible. It may be non-flammable. It may have a minimum level of flammability, but there's been no decision from the agency with respect to at what point does something become combustible? And B, there's been no decision-making with respect to Valet Living in its variance application that they submitted to the agency. They were willing to propose things that would make the canister resistant to flammability. And the agency has come out with this interpretation and just said, nope, you can't have these corridor trash collection services at all. But I think it's ambiguous whether if something can be put out there that's less flammable, is it combustible? Is it not combustible at that point? I think those are questions that would have to be addressed in a rulemaking proceeding. And that's really all we're asking for, Your Honors. We're asking for them to have to go through the ordinary process. We're asking for them to have to promulgate a rule. We're asking for them to take the public feedback, take feedback from the industry, and have a statement of need and reasonableness and potentially a hearing. That's how these matters are supposed to go. They're not supposed to be decided by a small committee of professionals for the entire state. So I ask for you to reverse the ALJ. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, attorney for respondent. We can't hear you.
Try and just ditch that. Is that better? Can you hear me now?
Okay. We can hear you now. Please proceed.
I took a deposition last week and that headset was working perfectly. But may it please the court, counsel, I am Assistant Attorney General Stephen Melcioni, appearing on behalf of the Minnesota State Fire Marshal Division. The question before this court is a purely legal one, as mentioned by Judge Frisch, and the parties do not dispute that the core issue is whether the guidance document put out by the Fire Marshal's Division is a plain reading of the rule, and therefore would not be an interpretive rule itself. I would like to address a couple of the questions that Your Honors had. First, in response to Judge Frisch's first question, counsel referenced SAAG, and the distinction between this case and SAAG, as noted by the ALJ, is that the term in place did not have a relevant definition anywhere. It wasn't defined, and the usage of that had been interpreted differently over time by the department itself. Whereas in this case, the Fire Marshal Division, and we've submitted evidence to the ALJ that the Fire Marshal's Division, when asked about this topic, has been consistent since the first time it was asked, and the first inquiry, I believe, came from the city of Bloomington or Edina.
What do you make of the differing answers on the survey that was sent out by the department? I mean, doesn't that give us some context that there's some ambiguity there as to what the term combustible storage means?
I think there are a few answers to that question. I think some of those answers were internally inconsistent, and that should be taken into account. For example, saying that that the trash is not storage, but is combustible storage, or vice versa, legally, those answers can't be reconciled. So that's an issue of someone who is not legally trained, not legally versed, kind of making a seat of their pants, I think this. Additionally, the International Fire Code, as adopted by the state, requires the state fire marshal to provide interpretations when asked by the local fire officials. The local fire officials are not supposed to have the utmost expertise on the fire code. That is the providence of the Fire Marshal's Division, which is why we saw this entire issue was really begun by those inquiries coming up from the local fire officials, which is within the providence, and I believe it's section 102 of the fire code that says the state fire marshal should essentially give those case-by-case guidances or those interpretations to the local officials. Additionally, the fact that disagreements exist, it does not by itself show ambiguity. Otherwise, we would never have a case where a court decides a statute is unambiguous. The fact that courts have decisions holding statutes are unambiguous means that there was a difference of opinion. And I would point the court to Overvague, which was cited in our briefing. In Overvague, the district court decided the statute was unambiguous. The Court of Appeals, three judges in this court decided that the statute was ambiguous, and then the Supreme Court disagreed. So if three Court of Appeals judges can decide a statute is ambiguous and then be reversed by the Supreme Court, the mere existence of the disagreement is not sufficient for there to be a legal ambiguity. There can be disagreement and still a legal finding as a matter of law that the statute is unambiguous, in particular in this case, because a specific dictionary definition is adopted by the code. And additionally, counsel referenced the in response to Judge Flory's question regarding context, and also in response to Judge Frisch's question as to what is this then, if not storage, counsel referenced the Phoenix case. And I think that that case is extremely instructive because in that case, the court was interpreting an insurance agreement where the terms of the insurance agreement itself protected the products of the store, which included gunpowder. And then the insurance company attempted to exclude storage of gunpowder in the addendum. And the court said, you can't do that. The policy itself insures gunpowder. So we're not going to consider it to be quote unquote stored for purposes of this addendum because your policy says that all of the items in the store are covered, including the gunpowder. That was very specific to those types of cases. And I think all of the other cases, and we run through them in our brief as to why they're inapplicable. They're talking about, you know, storage of liquor in a tavern, which obviously is going to have liquor. So when you insure a tavern, you can't then say, well, you're not allowed to store liquor in your tavern. It's a tavern, they have liquor. Those are a lot of the cases that were cited, and a lot of them predate the turn of last century. They're 1800 cases that deal with these antiquated insurance policies using this term very differently than it's being used in the fire code. So the ultimate decision for this court, however, is whether or not there is ambiguity in the statute, and it really comes down to just this term of combustible storage. I think it's important to note that, that first of all, the trash is combustible in at least two different ways. First of all, looking purely at the dictionary definition, trash meets the definition of combustible in that it can burn. That is the Merriam-Webster definition, capable of combustion. And it also meets the definition within the IFC itself. If this court were to adopt petitioner's argument that we should use the high-piled combustible storage definition of what is applicable, we go through in our brief, I believe it's pages 10 through 12, as to why that definition includes common household trash. It includes things like margarine, butter containers, candles, styrofoam. All the things you would find in common household trash are highly combustible materials. Again, the fire marshal does not believe that that definition is apposite because that is a defined term of art. We should be using the Merriam-Webster definition, which the ALJ used. But even if you were to ignore that definition and go to the second stage argument of the IFC definition, trash still meets the definition. As to storage.
So Mr. Melchioni, getting back to our standard of review as to whether or not the ALJ here erred as a matter of law in determining that the phrase combustible storage is unambiguous, in looking at the interpretation that was issued, there's a provision under a subtitle storage that says, in most apartment buildings, the egress corridor is the principal means of exiting the building. It is imperative that the fuel load in corridors be kept to a minimum so that fire growth is contained and critical egress path remain tenable for the occupants and emergency responders. What, if any, significance should we give that further interpretation in our analysis as to whether or not there was error here by the ALJ?
Well, I think the standard review is, as we mentioned, de novo. And so I don't know how much weight you're giving to the ALJ's opinion itself. I think it is a well-reasoned opinion and it should be taken into consideration. This paragraph here that you're referencing explains some of the policy concerns that might lead to the rule, that underlay the rule, but it doesn't change any of the analysis. You could take that paragraph out and the analysis would be exactly the same. This is simply an instance of a state agency providing additional reasons to us, essentially to the public, to say, not only is this the law, it's also a good idea for these reasons. That's essentially some editorialization, but has no impact on the analysis. And I think that's fairly common when agencies put things like FAQs on their website. Sometimes we just want to explain to the public why things are a good idea in addition to them being required by the code itself. And I think it's important to reference back to the definitions provided in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, because again, that is required. There are four potential definitions of the word store and that the ALJ references. And there is this argument that petitioners made that the ALJ shouldn't have used the definition of the word store to define storage. We do a slow walk through that in the brief, so I won't belabor it, but the only way to define storage is through the transitive verb store, because storage is essentially a nominalization. It is a nouning of a verb, as it were. So when we look to the verb store, we can all agree there are only really two definitions that we've proffered. The ALJ and the state fire marshal sought to use the definition to place or leave in a location for preservation or later use or disposal. And petitioner is advocating to lay away or accumulate. I think it's possible to say that the trash, when stored for up to 18 hours, and again, it's important that that is the caveat to the guidance given by the state fire marshal, storage up to 18 hours. What valet living actually does, their business model, their request for a variance are not before this court. What matters is the document put out by the fire marshal and whether that is an unambiguous interpretation of the rule. So when stored for up to 18 hours, either of those definitions are satisfied. But as the ALJ and the fire marshal noted, it is that third definition, to leave in a location for later disposal, that clearly and obviously applies to this type of usage of trash cans. Well, doesn't matter if it's a trash can, whether it's a trash can or a trash bag or a receptacle, it's all being stored for later disposal. And petitioners do make the argument that that the parentheses should be given more weight, warehouse, library, or computer memory. I argue that, and it's argued in the briefing, that those qualifiers don't necessarily mean that the storage has to be long-term. Storage in a library can be transient. Storage on a computer can be extremely transient.
Is there some ambiguity there with that temporal component, though? I mean, here's an example. What if I live in an apartment building and I'm coming home and I see the valet down the hall and the valet is picking up trash and they're coming down the hall and they're going to be at my doorstep in a hot second. And I run inside, I grab my trash, I bring it outside, drop it off just for convenience for the valet, and they pick it up right away. Is that storage? I mean, is that temporal component at least some ambiguity? Does it create some ambiguity as to whether the trash is storage at that point in time?
There are two responses to that. First, I would note that that's not the case we're dealing with, because the fire marshal's guidance document presupposes up to 18 hours. And it's one of those things where essentially what the guidance document says is, in this instance where storage is up to 18 hours, it is prohibited. What you're talking about
from from 0 to 18 hours, right? That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
From 0 to 18 hours.
It would encompass my hypothetical.
Which brings me to the second point. And in the guidance document, it could be up to 18 hours. So there's no guarantee it's going to be transient. What we have to understand is we're talking about a system model where it can be stored up to 18 hours. But also, I think even transient momentary leaving of something in the hallway would be storage, because there is no temporal component in the definitions. There is no temporal component anywhere.
Well, and if for you, later, if you for look at later the, collection is a temporal component, later.
Right, but whether the later is 1 minute, 1 hour, or a season, as in the in storage for winter, it doesn't matter. It's still being stored, even temporarily. Think about
So I think my hypothetical is a little different. It's for immediate collection because the person's right there to collect it. So my question really is when it says later collection, does that give us some sort of ambiguity as to what that means, what the word means?
I mean, I think it all has to be read in context. So if you're walking out and handing it to the person, that's probably not being stored. But as soon as you're putting it down and leaving it for them to pick up, whether it's a minute later or an hour, it is being stored. And I bring it back to the example given in the definition of computer storage. So in computer memory, some of that data is stored for seconds, but it's still stored. It's stored and then immediately rewritten, you know, your temporary internet cache. As soon as you close your browser, it's gone, but it's still being stored. And that's one of the examples given in the dictionary definition that we are compelled to use. And I think it's also important to keep in context that this is the fire code. If a fire were to break out in that 5 minutes, it doesn't care how long the trash has been there. It doesn't care if the trash has been there for a minute, an hour, or a season. It's going to burn all the same and present the exact same hazard, which is why it's imperative that these quarters be kept clean, and why the IFC was amended when adopted in Minnesota to add this sentence, because this is a uniquely Minnesota provision, which is why all of the arguments about the IFC are beside the point. For these reasons, we urge the court to affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Huntington, any rebuttal? You're muted.
The purpose of the adoption of the combustible storage, first off, there's no evidence of any intent. Second off, it would not be appropriate for you to consider any such intent in ruling on the ambiguity question or in attempting to divine what that intent was. And I think it's truly remarkable to think that a phrase as ambiguous and vague as this was intended to eliminate and prohibit an entire service industry which operates in 40 plus other states. With respect to the hypothetical by Judge Frisch, I'd like to say, if you side with the fire marshals here, what you are saying is, if I walk out into the corridor, and I used to live in an apartment, so I remember these days, and I leave the garbage right outside the door and my phone rings, and I walk inside the door for 5 minutes, I violated the fire code because I left it there. I intended to later dispose it, but I'm leaving it there for a minute, for 5 minutes. I think it is an absurd result to think that that would be a violation of the fire code. I do think that it would be just a remarkable finding. With respect to the Phoenix v. Taylor decision, the definition of storage has not changed. We're not advocating for the accumulate or lay away. We're advocating for the definition of storage, not store, which is the act of storing, the state of being stored, especially the safekeeping of goods. In the Taylor decision, they said the word storing has been held to denote a keeping for safe custody to be delivered in the same condition as when received, and where the safekeeping is the principal object of the deposit and not a keeping for the purpose of consumption or sale. That's what separates this from counsel's discussion of computer data or discussion of a book in a library. It may well be that that's transient. Perhaps I leave a book in a library for a day, but the purpose is I put the book there for it to be kept safe until it was taken out by somebody else. I didn't put the book there to be thrown away. All of the garbage that we're talking about in this case, the services we're talking about, which they say are prohibited, again, the purpose was for it all to be thrown away. And that just distinguishes the definition of store that they're relying upon. Whether something is reasonable or necessary is not before this court. If the agency wants to subsequently enact a rule and argue that it's reasonable and necessary to have this prohibition, they can certainly do that. But I don't think this court should let that factor into its analysis in terms of counsel's argument about why this is necessary. They can present evidence in a proper rulemaking proceeding, but you don't need to weigh in at all on that question to decide that this was a improperly unadopted rule. So again, Your Honors, what we're asking you to do is hold that the interpretation is unadopted rule. We're asking you to order the agencies to take the interpretation down from the State Fire Marshal website. And we're asking for you to enjoin the agencies from attempting to enforce this until such time as they actually follow proper rulemaking procedures. And unless there are any further questions, I'll stop my argument there.
Judge Flory, Judge Frisch, any other questions? Thank you very much. The case is well briefed, well argued, and is now submitted.